Welcome to the Autistic Mystic. My name is Jeff. I am the Autistic Mystic, and today's show is so good. And I say that a lot, but I don't feel like I've lied to you any of the times that I've said it. And today is no exception. My guest today is Derek Terry. Derek is a pastor, a social justice activist, a writer, a speaker, a community leader, and a social media influencer. And when I say social media influencer, I don't mean like the gross, I have 10,000 followers, give me free stuff type of influencer. I mean somebody who does not take the trust their followers have placed in them lightly and actually inspires people to do better and to be better. He's such a great guy. And this is such a great conversation. We talk about coming out well in ministry. We talk about racial injustice and oppressive systems. We talk about growing as a person by being placed in spaces where you are uncomfortable, which is so important. So buckle up, grab your noise-canceling headphones, and get ready for today's info dump. Here's Moral Monsters and Modern Idolatry with Derek Terry.
Do you stim when you worship, tick when you pray, info dump theology, or think you might be gay? The Autistic Mystic, we're talking about stuff you probably like.
Welcome to the Autistic Mystic. It's been an interesting endeavor for me to sort of connect with all my favorite. Everyone's been people I've met on TikTok so far, and everyone's been queer so far. So that's been
that's cool.
A really wonderful, it wasn't intentional that way. It just happened to be. And I was like, you know what? This is filling me up. I'm enjoying this. This is good. So yeah. And I wanted to have you on because you have such an energetic presence while also being like the coolest looking person I've ever seen on TikTok.
Wow, you gotta look at more people.
and I just thought we could have a really interesting conversation about, you know, like basically everything from being a queer person in ministry to doing innovative digital ministries to responding to trolls with sort of like a prophetic sass, almost, if you want to call it that. The conversation I had yesterday was about prophetic mockery and like and how the prophets in the Bible use comedy to sort of clap back.
Very true.
Yeah. So I just think we can cover like the whole gamut. What drew you to ministry, do you think?
I guess I would say I was really called. I grew up in the church. I was active in the church always. Church is my like happy place. Mm. We were there 3 or 4 times a week, and not so much because I was made to be there. I mean, that's where my friends were, and I was the president of the youth group, and I played the piano with the youth choir and sang in the youth choir, and yeah. And so a lot of people kind of felt like I would become a minister, and I was like, psh, nah, I'm going to be a doctor. And no, that's not what happened. So yeah, it was just like, it's my like happy place. It's definitely right. What I feel called, compelled by God to do.
Did you grow up in an affirming tradition? Like, was that something you had to sort out for yourself, or?
Yeah, it was not affirming. The denomination I grew up in was very active as it relates to social justice. Mm. It was a Black denomination, but it was not affirming. There was not a lot of bashing. There was, like, I felt like, okay, you're not supposed to be gay, but it wasn't something that was like a big deal in the church that people preached against all the time.
Okay.
It was just, you know, every now and then. And when people would talk about someone being gay, it was not an affirming thought. It was like, oh, you know, poor, you know, that poor soul or that, you know.
Right.
It was like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, they're going to hell, they're nasty. Right. But it was like, oh, you know, you know, it's a shame. Like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I mean, like for me, I kind of like I knew I was queer probably 16 or 17 is when I heard the term bisexual, and I was like, oh, that explains everything about me. And but like, and I kind of knew I was supposed to go into ministry, but I fought it for the longest time because I was like, no, I want to be a musician. I want to do it with my band. I want to start my own business. And like, none of that stuff was working out for me. And then like the minute I finally gave in and was like, okay, I'm going to go back to school and become a pastor, is like when all the stuff I was trying to do on my own ended up working out for the church.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, I got to go play with a group of musicians and tour around with them and like put the business skills I was trying to do. Cause we had an indie musician, like an indie band promotion company, my spouse and I, when we first got together. And it was going great until the recession in 2009 hit, and then all of our all ages venues shut down, and that's where all the money is in indie promotions. If anyone out there is interested in getting into indie music promotions, all the money's in all ages venues, because adults don't want to go out and spend money, but kids want to do. We'll do anything to get out of the house. So, yeah. So how did you come to like reconcile your sexuality then with your faith coming out of that tradition?
I guess actually I reconciled the theology around queerness and God's love and affirmation before I came to terms with my own sexuality. So I guess that was what I needed to do to come to terms, probably.
Right.
And we, the church that I pastored in that denomination, in the city that I'm from, one of my members wanted to host a pride service for the LGBT center at the local university that I graduated from. And I was like, I can't do that. We'll get in trouble, you know, with the church. And yeah. Then I talked to the director of the center who had started coming to my church, and he was telling me all these stories of like the hurt that so many people had felt in church.
Right.
I mean, and some of them go to church and, you know, for prayer and they're struggling and the pastor calls them out and they went home and tried to kill themselves. And I mean, just all kinds right. of crazy stuff. And so after I heard those stories, I was like, okay. We have to do this, because, you know, I knew that we would handle it well. And there were students who grew up in a church and just felt like they couldn't be Christian. They couldn't be Christian and come to terms or come out in their sexuality. And so I had a service called Healing Church Hurt. And the theme that Sunday was God loves me and so do I, you know, understanding God loves you. And I have a t-shirt and all that, you know, that's like one of my mantras. And so doing that and getting involved with some of the speak backs and some of the work with the students, then when I was 26, I was like, what if I'm gay? And I had been sexually assaulted when I was younger. So sometimes, you know, the thought would come up and I would suppress it. And I was like, oh, that's because, you know, that happened to me when I was so young. And
right.
I mean, I have way more experience dating in heterosexual dating or dating opposite gender than I did same gender that I do at this point even. And so I was like, yeah, but then I was dating a woman at the time, pastoring a church. And I was really like, what if I'm gay?
We interrupt this podcast for another installment of Mystic Moments. Hey friends, I want to take a minute to touch on something here, and we actually get a bit more into it later in the episode, but I want to talk to you about the thought that Derek just expressed. What if I'm gay? Now, I'm not saying that you, the listener, are gay. If you are, that's great, and I celebrate that. But if you've ever thought that question, what if I'm gay? It might not mean you're gay, but it's a pretty good indicator that you aren't straight. Something I've heard over and over in the trans community is that cis people don't wonder if they might be transgendered, wondering if you are transgender or wondering if you are not cis is a good indicator that you are transgender or are not cis. I think the same goes for queerness in general. Wondering if you're gay might not mean you're gay, but it might mean that you're not straight. The LGBTQ rainbow is vast with many different colors. Here's something else I want to throw your way. If the question pops up in your head regularly, I think that's God. God designed your gender and your sexuality and you as a whole. And God wants you to be able to live authentically as they made you. And if that is as a cisgender heterosexual, I love it. Let's celebrate that. But if that's as a member of the LGBTQ2PIA+ community, the Alphabet Mafia, that's also wonderful. And let's celebrate that. And gender and sexuality are fluid and a spectrum, so where you land right now might not be where you find yourself in 10 years, and that's okay. But listen for that still small voice of wondering, leading you to personal truths about yourself and the way that God made you. Okay, back to the show.
And I really, like, thought about it and talked to my therapist about it. And then I had my beloved childhood pastor, he was my favorite pastor. Like, the way that I pastor is based on, like, the way that he pastored.
Right.
He was just so cool and so personable and so nice. And he was gay. He never, you know, it wasn't an out situation. Like, you couldn't do that in my denomination, but it's right. Obvious he was gay. Even his family now won't say he was gay. But he was murdered. And it was this whole gay for pay situation by these two young guys. They, you know, murdered him. I mean, stabbed him a bunch of times, took his car, emptied out his bank account. And I just remember thinking, like, I think he was in his early 50s. Like, what if he were able to, like, live his truth?
Right.
Like, if he didn't have to get these, you know, pay these young guys to come over and do whatever. Because he felt like, you know, what if he felt trapped or felt like he couldn't live his truth? And I just remember thinking about that. And, like, that happened at the same time I was like, okay, I might be gay. And the same time I went out on my first date with a guy. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm gay. Like, if it's a thing, then that is me. So it was weird. Like, it all happened through tragedy and weirdness, but that's what happened.
Yeah. Wow. I kind of have, like, similar story. Like, my spouse and I, my spouse is AFAB. I'm AMAB. And we, like, we're straight up with each other when we got together. And, like, I knew they were queer and they know I was queer. I didn't misgender them. Sometimes they go by she, sometimes they go by they, sometimes they go by he, but for the most part, I try and do they. So, like, we always had been, like, upfront with each other, but we were like, well, we're in this straight presenting marriage. On the outside, we look completely straight. And so we were kind of like, I guess we can just hide in our marriage forever because, like it works for us. And at the time we were not affirming, like, I grew up in an evangelical church that was not affirming. And even after I came out, one of the pastors from that church that was a pastor at the church when I was a kid, and he is a pastor at his own church, essentially told me, like, I'd rather not know God than know a God who lovingly and intentionally created gay people. I was like, that's not a good take, dude. and then over time, like, God started softening my heart to it. And I had a number of queer kids in my youth group that I could just never bring myself to, like, say, oh, well, your lifestyle is sinful or something. Like, I just couldn't bring myself to condemn them. And there was just always something in my heart that was, like, knew that it was not a sin, not what I'd been taught, but I couldn't reconcile it to the Bible. And over time, I learned more and I was, like, coming around, but there's always still that, like, nagging voice in the back of your head. And I had this, like, prophetic moment when I was watching a comedy special of all things. Have you seen Nanette by Hannah Gadsby? It was on Netflix. And so she's a lesbian. It starts out as a comedy bit, and then it turns into like this like sermon about like not being self-deprecating anymore, and she's not going to do self-deprecating comedy, and like goes into like some really traumatic experiences and like pulls the whole thing around, and like you go from like laughing at how funny her jokes are to like just like being gut-wrenched by her story. And I just had like, I just felt God like screaming at me, like, of course I love these people, of course these are my children, of course this is fine, like, and like, and it was like, and I feel weird that it was like watching a Netflix special that like it was like the very last tipping point that sent me like full blown over the edge. But yeah, you kind of have to reconcile, like you were saying, reconcile it for other people before you can reconcile it for yourself. Because even after that, we were still living as like a straight presenting couple. And it was only more recently that we've been like full blown. Yeah, we're queer. But
yeah, and that was something, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, how can you preach against that? And I'm like, I never preached against homosexuality.
Right.
Even before, and it wasn't, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was conscious at some point, but I also don't preach against any group or any, right, any person. Like, that's just not in my,
right,
my wheelhouse. And so I never.
There's just not a lot of content there if you're going to go by, yeah, scriptural preaching, right? Like, there's like the six or seven verses, and like Jesus doesn't talk about it at all. And, right, and talks very often about like treating people, not treating people like crap, and like, sorry, not, yeah. the other thing I was thinking, because when you're like, yeah, like I might be gay, and I recently came out as non-binary, sort of. It's like my non-binary is tied into my experience with autism, so it's called like Autix Envy. And it's a neurogender. I just learned about them, and as soon, like, I just have like been gender agnostic for forever, because I like, I don't understand gender, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't feel any joy or any sadness about being a male. And then I learned about neurogenders, and I was like, no, that is me. That is exactly what I am. And for the first time, felt like euphoria. But I've always like questioned, like, because I don't get it, I'm like, am I non-binary? Am I trans? And like the basic label of non-binary never stuck with me. But like talking to other trans people, and it probably goes for like sexuality too, is like cisgender people don't spend any time wondering if they're not cisgender. Right. And like, and so like having that thought, like, am I gay?
Exactly.
is probably like a good indication that maybe a little, like at least a little bit. Yeah. So, wow. How long have you been doing ministry now?
So 2003.
Wow.
So we're talking 18 years.
Yeah. Wow.
I was young.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in undergrad. I was a sophomore in college when I, you know, acknowledged, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I started ministerial training. And in my former denomination, you're licensed to preach after 1 year. And, you're licensed. And then 1 year later, you start like formal training.
Okay, yeah.
And that's for the denomination. So yeah, I was 19 when I, wow, started.
That's awesome. And is it like, is, you were saying like social justice was like a big part of the denomination you came out of, is that still like a big part of your focus now?
Yes. So my church, we focus a lot on ending racial violence. dismantling systems of oppression. And we do some pretty heavy, some heavy work and book studies. And we've done a lot virtually. It kind of sucks because the in-person, like for some of this stuff, in-person is just so much better, so much easier.
Right.
But, you know, COVID. But yeah, we've been doing that really heavy. We dabbled in it before, but after the 2016 election,
right.
It's like that and Healthy Planet are like part of our core, like this is why we exist. This is our like foundation of the ministry of the church.
Right. That's awesome. And is there like, if someone wants to start getting into that, is there, like you were saying, you're doing book studies, is there a resource you would recommend to, cause like coming out of like the churches I've been involved in have all had a high regard for social justice and not always had a great practice of social justice. So like, whenever like, people ask me, I'm like I have a few people I point to, but is there like a particular resource that you recommend to help get people or a particular practice or mindset you recommend people start doing that would get them connected to community activism?
That is such a really, really good question because a lot of churches do it really poorly. The evangelical church has this huge racial reconciliation push, and even the word bothers me. It's that, you know, that word of reconciling. And there's a scripture, I forget the scripture.
Which I've used like 8 times this.
No. It's the intention.
Right.
So I do believe the intention is good, but a lot of the work that I see, okay, for example, there's a huge church, I won't name them, but they have this big 8-week course that they want, you know, different cultures or races to go through, black and white. And after those 8 weeks, you get a certificate and, you know, you're not racist.
We solved racism.
Exactly. And it ends with a meal with, you know, if you're white, with brown people. And, you know, it's, oh, the police aren't that bad. They're just doing their job. And it's just very, you know, it's very, and, you know, there are scriptures in there. And so what I tell people, you have to find groups that are doing the work that makes you uncomfortable and having conversations that makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
You have to read the books that make you uncomfortable and watch the stuff that makes you uncomfortable. Because one of the biggest problems that we have in our country is people don't know. Like, there's an ignorance.
Yeah.
There's a complete and total ignorance of the experiences of others. And right. It's really easy to sit back in whatever privilege that we have. I have male privilege, so I have to force myself to understand what females endure, you know,
right.
And if you're straight, then you have to, you know, reconcile or understand what queer, what happens. And then even as a queer man, I'm pretty like, I'm, as they would say in my community, not that clockable. Like, you know, I'm big, I'm pretty masculine presenting usually. So it's, you know, I don't get some of the looks, the hate that some of my friends who are more effeminate get.
Right.
Like when I'm out with them, I'm like, why are these people looking at, you know, it's something that right. I'm not used to, that they're oblivious to. And so that happens in race. Like, if you live in a really white world, in a really closed off world, and the only black people you see are on the news, on television, Oprah, you know, what, like you have no idea.
Right.
And so you have to put yourself like you have to, there's James Cone would say, you know, you have to stand with the oppressed. Like,
yes,
you have to is a choice, right? It's a choice to go there. And so that's always the work, is find those voices where people like me, when you come in, I'm not one of those, oh, hey, you know, you're a racist, your mama was a racist and your daddy was a racist. No.
Right.
But we look at the systems in this country, like white people control everything. Yeah. Well, we have a black president. Well, white people still control the Congress, the Senate, the school board, the banks, and here's how those systems disproportionately help some and hurt others. And here's how we all have agreed to that and how we all support that. And I'm not saying you're a shitty person, but we all play a role in this system. And you have to understand the truth. And this country has lied to us for so long about who we are as a country.
Yeah.
And this beautiful American story of, you know, from sea to shining sea, like we literally stole half of Mexico and now will not let the very people that we stole it from come back to the land of their ancestors. Like, that's a reality. Like, there's some truths there that we have to, like, we have to deal with. 5,000 black people were lynched in this country and there's still no anti-lynching legislation.
Right.
Like, lynchings took place on churches. No major white denomination ever spoke out against lynching during America's lynching era. So, like, these are all truths that make people uncomfortable.
Right.
People say, oh, well, slavery ended in 1865. Yeah, but the Smithsonian is still around. It was built by slaves. The White House is still around. The Capitol is still, like, there's all these things that are still around.
Well, and there's so many other systems, like we didn't end slavery. We went slavery light, right? Like, exactly. Like there was like, we by became, yeah, like through redlining and like through like the like when the show Watchmen came out the other day and everyone found out about the Tulsa Massacre, which like knowledge that's out there, but like it's just not talked about. And like the black community that was actually prospering and white people couldn't handle it. And so they burned it to the ground and killed everybody. And like, and so people are like, cause I've heard the argument too from people and they're like, no, generational wealth and generational poverty is a myth. And I'm like, it's not though, because every time someone gets a little bit forward, it's burned down and they're sent back. And then, and like there was a bank last year, I think, in America that was convicted or that it was like discovered they were doing redlining still. Like, so like these aren't antiquated old things. These are either things that are still happening or things that affected people who are still alive to remember it.
Absolutely. My parents were a part of a class action suit because they applied to get a home loan to buy a house in a neighborhood and were turned down, not because of their credit, but because the bank didn't want them to buy in that neighborhood. Even now today, it's hard to get refinance loans for properties that are paid off. It's hard to get insurance from certain companies. And so we talk about like redlining, mass incarceration, all these things. These were government sanctioned terror or turmoil created, like literally. And redlining wasn't just, okay, here's where black people could live, here's where white people could live. No, it determined where industry went, where jobs went, where resources like schools and libraries and these are things that happen
with
our lifespan.
I heard something explained the other day about the prison system in the US too, and it's that people are so higher, much higher, like way disproportionate amount of black Americans in the prison system. They then get transferred to prisons in white neighborhoods so that their body count adds to the population there, but they have no right to vote or anything like that. So there's more representation on a government level for those areas, and they have more deciding power because they have more legislators, but it's completely disproportionate to the amount of people who live there versus the amount of people who can actually vote, because most of the people are in prison. And I'm like, that is literally like using people's bodies to pass legislation that oppresses them. And like, it was like, it made me sick to my stomach. I'm in Canada and we like to think we're better, and we're not. And we have like a really, really dark history with like how we treated our First Nations people and our Indigenous people, and like to the point where like South Africa consulted with the Canadian government on how to apartheid better. And like, so like we like to think we're a lot better than the States, and we're just more polite about it, which is almost worse. Like, like at least America's up front about it.
We're racist and we know.
So yeah, that's, yeah, it's really like there is really big needs that needs to happen. And what you were saying, like you need to be in environments that make you uncomfortable and read the books that make you uncomfortable. And that's so huge, because there's growth in tension, and we naturally shy away from awkward situations or conflict or something like that. But if we're able to like navigate the uncomfortableness, and if we're able to be uncomfortable with people, like racism should make us uncomfortable because it's oppressing people, and we're benefiting from it, or I'm benefiting from it. Like, so I should be uncomfortable about that to the point that I want to change it. And if we can ignore it, and if we're not in those spaces, then it's not making us uncomfortable. Then there's no drive to fix it, because it doesn't affect us, even from the social awkwardness standpoint. So
in a lot of things, people just don't know. Like, there's just so much history that people just don't know. And of course, there's certain things you don't want to know. Like, if you have this high regard and respect for your parents, you don't want to know the crappy stuff that they did.
Right.
Like, before you were born, or while, you know, when you were little, like, you don't want to know. But ignorance is, it hurts. It causes devastation and destruction. And it hurts the people in the majority race as well. I always tell people, if I poison someone, I get poison on me in the process.
Right.
And James Baldwin used to always say that race is not a Black problem. It is an American problem. Like, it is a world problem. It's not just a problem for the people on the bad end of it. It messes up everything. It stains everything.
Well, and it's sort of the same way, like, patriarchy hurts men, not to the same degree that it hurts women, but we have this weird toxic culture around masculinity, and like, you can't I've heard more than one person say that they were told umbrellas are gay, and I'm like, are you you're invincible to rain? Like real men don't use umbrellas? Like, what kind of toxic crap is that?
So weird.
So in the same way, I can absolutely see what you're saying. Like, in the same way that patriarchy hurts men, racism can absolutely poison. Because it's like, what kind of person are you? Like, there's no liberation in the oppressing of other people. Like, because you're spending so much time clinging to the oppressive model that you're not actually able to like live and enjoy your own freedom. So
James Baldwin used the phrase becoming moral monster. Like, in order for you to do that, you have to be so detached from not even from humanity, but from caring. You have to be so detached to see a person suffering,
right,
or a group suffering, or a child suffering. Like, I remember when that young man in Michigan who was at a, it was like a group foster home situation. I forgot what it was called, like Lifeway Academy or something. It was a place in Michigan where 16-year-old black male in this group home setting tried to start a food fight. He threw a couple pieces of bread at a fellow classmate, and like a bunch of staff like tackled him and stayed on him for 12 minutes. And it took the nurse 12 minutes after that to call the ambulance. They thought he was faking it, and he died 2 days later. And I remember the crappy people saying, oh, well, he shouldn't have been throwing food. And I'm like,
that warrants a death sentence?
A 16-year-old in a high school cafeteria threw a piece of bread. I remember, this is not going to give me any feminist award, but I'm honest. I remember, like, this girl that I had a crush on in high school was wearing a low-cut shirt, and I was trying to throw stuff in her. Again, not my shining moment, but what I'm saying is, you're young, you're dumb, you do stuff, you don't deserve to get suffocated by grown-ups in the cafeteria. And then I thought he was faking. How do you fake for 12 minutes? It was just really gross. And so I'm just saying, some of the stuff that people say, oh, well, you should just comply. Oh, you should just do this. Or you should just do that. It's like, what type of monster do we become when we detach humanity from people that aren't like us so easily?
And it's the same people who say you should comply who are like refusing to wear masks.
I got my rights. Exactly. My liberties. I'm like, and would you say that if it were your child?
Right.
Your spouse.
Right.
Your friend. You. Like, you break the law. I speed sometimes. Do I deserve to get shot if I get pulled over?
Right.
Yeah, you broke the law. It's such a double standard.
And I find it really interesting, like the more I'm looking into, like, part of, sorry, to take it back to queerness too, like, to part of my understanding what the Bible is actually saying in the clobber verses is understanding what it's saying about idolatry, because most of them are tied directly to idolatry. And idolatry is linked to the idea of the image of God. And when we give up our birthright as being image bearers of God and give it to a statue, we start seeing other people less being made in the image of God as well. And that's why idolatry is bad, because it makes us see other humans as less human. Mm-hmm. And so there's the moral monster that you're talking about is absolutely a form of modern idolatry, because we're seeing people as less than human in order to mistreat them. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what the Bible, like, that's what Jesus is preaching against for most of his ministry.
Yeah. Is
see God in every person that is not like you.
Right.
In the woman at the well. What about, you know, the man on the road who meets the Good Samaritan? Like, where how can you find God in people that are not like you?
Mm-hmm.
And we really struggle with that. Some people really struggle with that.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I sometimes struggle with that. Like, I have a hard time seeing God in Republicans. But yeah. and that actually is the thrust behind how I've been ending the episodes when I'm editing them, as I edit it and I say, remember that until next time, remember that you are the divine image of God, the chosen vessel of the Holy Spirit, and the way God interacts with creation, and so are the people you hate.
Yes.
that's
real. Yeah, and that's the check. It's always, okay, what is my intention here?
Right.
Like, I always have to do that self-check.
Yes.
And I do that on TikTok because there's a lot of kids. And once I realized that, I've only been on 3 months. Three or 4 months. I haven't been
Has it only been that long?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It has not been. I started at the end of January.
So okay.
April, May, 4 months. And it's TikTok is its own thing. It's completely different than the other socials, I think.
Yeah.
And I encounter hate. I get a lot of hate on Facebook. I have a huge Facebook following. So when you have, you know, 200 and some thousand people following you and sharing your stuff, you get trolls right. all the time. But, you know, they're usually old, weird people that are, you know, that are just, yeah. Well, on TikTok, it would be like kids sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's when, once I realized that it was a lot of kids, and then there's a lot of this, you know, weird, creepy trolls. I ended up on the wrong side of TikTok about a month ago, and I took a break.
Right.
Because I ended up on angry, white, straight, cis, male TikTok. And I mean, it was, I ended up just deleting the videos because I was like, this is way too much.
Yeah.
But, you know. You see that negativity, and I have to always remember, this is not about me. They looked at a 15-second or 50-second video. They don't know me.
Right.
This is their own stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so that's when Jesus says, pray for your enemies, bless those that, you know, curse you and all these things. That's why. Because I'm like, you know, what must they be going through
in
order to do that? Like, I see stuff all the time that I don't like, and I never think, oh, let me sit here and call them out. I'm like,
psh. Right.
I did.
Yeah. I'm like, one of the comments that I used that I was very happy with was someone posted something on me, and I was like, I'm very sorry that the scroll up function on your phone is broken.
Exactly. Like, you have nothing better to do. And if you're a kid, you know, work, you're a 12-year-old sitting at home eating ramen, watching Netflix, like, So
Yeah. And my spouse called me out recently because she was like, I don't like it when you get like, she's like, I don't care if you respond to the trolls, and I don't care if you use like sarcasm and stuff like that. And she's like, a few of your videos lately have been like too snarky and like unkind. And I'm like, all right. And so like, I got a Leviticus 18:22 comment today. And instead of being like overly snarky, I just responded, I'm like, oh, that's cute. You must be new here. Enjoy your look around and hopefully you'll learn something. Love ya. It's so, like, I try to keep it more positive.
It's hard. That's why I took a break.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people started like, if I get you, you know, if I saw you in person, I'd do this and this. Like,
right?
Like, but you know, he's in his little holler somewhere. And I mean, I had one woman, she was like 70.
Right.
This old, and you know, I'll punch you in your nose. And I'm like, I'm 6'5", lady. Like, but you know, everyone's a giant on the social.
Right.
And that's what I want to make sure I don't do.
Right.
Is like, because at the end of the day, this is not my life. I'm not making any money off of this.
Right.
And so if something gets on my nerves, I'm like, freak it. Nope. I'll just take a break and I'll just observe. And if I want to do something, I'll come back. I also think TikTok, this is a whole other conversation, but really quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
I also think that they, just the way the algorithms work, they really want you to be one thing.
Yes, they do.
So
when TikTok was first starting to, it had been out for a while, but it was starting to reach like market saturation, like a year and a half ago, maybe. And they actually like released how the algorithm works. And they're like, your first five videos dictate what kind of content you make in our mind, according to the algorithm. And that's the kind of content we're going to boost. And we're going to send it to people. All your content is going to get sent to people who like that. So if you deviate from that, then those people aren't going to like your video and it's not going to do well. So it's like, it does want you to be locked in on one specific thing.
And that psychology, and that's what I always have to remind people. I did a social media workshop a couple weeks ago, and I just kept repeating over and over and over again. Social media is for you to show who you are.
Right.
Like, it is for you. It is your platform. It is for you to just be yourself. Don't get caught up in how many likes, how many this, how many that. Why? Because you're not getting paid for this.
Right.
Like, if you're a marketer, market researcher, like, if you, you know, high dollar influencer, this is that wasn't the workshop. Like this, be yourself. But people get addicted to how many views, how many likes, how many this, how many that. And so with TikTok only boosting certain things, if you don't get that, then consciously or subconsciously, you're like, well, let me go do what will get all of that. And I refuse. I've always been obstinate.
And like when I think about it, like if I think about it from the standpoint of if I was promoting a concert and I sold 400 tickets, if 400 people saw that concert, that's a good night. Right. And so, but when I get 400 views on a video, I'm like, what is this crap? Because I've had videos that got multiple hundreds of thousands of views. And now that I'm like, I only got 400 views. Whereas if I was in a room with 400 people, that's a great room to talk to. Right. Like that's a lot of people who have heard what I have to say. That's like, that's incredible. And so I really have to remind myself of that. I'm like, I played in venues where like 98 people would, like that was the max capacity. That was a good night. If my video gets seen by 8 times as many people as that, like that's a good night. Like, I don't know what I'm so upset about that it didn't break 1,000 or it didn't hit like 30, that like, yeah, especially after you hit one where it's like the one I did one where that was talking about how Barabbas's first name is Jesus as well. And I posted that before I left for work. I had an hour commute. When I got to work, it was at 20,000 views. Wow. And so I was like, but then nothing hit like that afterwards. And so for like a week after that, I'm like, why isn't this taking off? And I'm like, this is all performing very well according to how my stuff normally performs. It's just not hitting 20,000 views in the first hour.
And that's the psychology. And it's so easy to, and then, you know, that's what I tell people, like social media is designed to keep you active, involved, engaged for as long as you can. Like these are for-profit companies that make money based on the number of new subscribers, how long people stay on ads and all this type of stuff. Like this is
because it's all tracked. Like I studied marketing for a bit, and so like when you're trying to figure out your base demographic for a product, you go look at like
this
demographic age 14 to 18 spends 3 hours a day on TikTok, two hours a day on Instagram, 30 seconds on Facebook. So you're gonna hit TikTok so
I'm just determined that I'm not going to be that person. Like there are people that are like, oh my God, your video hit, you know, so many. And I'm like, which one? They're like, which one? Cause I just do what I want to do. And it's all over the place. One minute it's race. 1 minute it's, you know, my grandfather. I did my first dance video. It's LGBT. Like, it's like, this is me. These are all the sides of me. I'm a Gemini with quadruplets instead of twins. Like I'm just put it out there. But yeah, I have people that get like really like upset. Like, I'm making all these videos and no one's looking. And I'm like, are you doing make the video.
Make it for you. Make it because you like it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too, is like when I spent years trying to make social media content that other people would like. And when I start making stuff for myself, not everything hits, but I'm having more fun doing it. And then eventually something does hit and I'm like, hey, that's great.
And it's a true reflection of who you are.
Right.
Versus, you know, doing something, trying to make something happen. Like
right.
People want honesty. That's why like marketing now, most companies are investing in social media instead of, you know, television. Who watches television? Or instead of print. And And so influencers is all about people, like, yeah. And people,
it's funny though, because they don't like, most companies don't understand social media. They just know it's like terrible. The magic bullet. So they're like, we want something that'll go viral. And I'm like, why? Like, are you prepared for what to do when it goes viral? Like, you can't make something go viral. If it does go viral, do you have a plan of how to actually capitalize on that? Or like, what's your end goal here?
I did a focus group for a marketing company that was doing something for Black queer people. Mm. And, you know, they showed us a couple of ads and what do you think? And it was so obvious. I was like, there's no queer person or Black person.
Yeah.
Like, it's so bad. It's so bad. You know, it's this big, expensive downtown, you know, marketing firm, and they're paying, you know, $100 for the focus group. So they're doing all the things.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this ain't it. Like, this.
Right. Yeah. Which is like why representation matters. And like,
exactly.
And yeah, because people are wanting to see themselves in the media that they consume, and wanting to see themselves. I mean, and that's why, like, so something a lot of people don't know is the reason Spider-Man has a mask was because even though Peter Parker was white, that like Stan Lee intentionally gave him that mask so that when he's doing the Spider-Man thing, anyone could imagine themselves as Spider-Man, because you can't really tell, like, he's got, even for superhero, he's got more of an androgynous body, and
absolutely,
yeah, and like, and so like anyone can imagine themselves as Spider-Man, even though Peter Parker is a very specific person in the cultural context. Like when he's in the mask and when he's in the suit, anyone can see themselves doing that, and which is why like Miles Morales was like so monumental when he came around. Because they actually put someone behind the mask that people can see themselves as too. But yeah, so like when people see themselves on a place in a media, they're more likely to connect with it. And if you don't have those people involved in the making of your media, people aren't going to connect with it, and they're going to go to the people who are making it. Which is, I think, why social media is so big, because it's not the huge produced thing. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, the videos that are overly produced don't do as well as the shaky, grainy, regular person, because
it just doesn't feel genuine.
Oh, that's me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And you've had some really amazing insights and some really powerful takes on some really pressing issues. So I appreciate it. This is going to be a great episode.
I just hope I made sense. It's been a long day.
No, it's been great. This has been fantastic. I love this. So
awesome. Thank you for the invite. This was fun.
Oh, my pleasure. If anyone listens to this podcast, I mean, I'm not doing it for the listens, but like, I'll have you back sometimes, what I'm trying to say.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We did it. Congratulations. That's our show for today. Big thanks to Derek Terry for taking the time to have this conversation with me. You can find Derek on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Rev Derek Terry. That's RevDerekTerry, which is great consistently. My man knows his social media. If you want to find me online, you can find me at CFC_PastorJeff on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also find the CFC Pastor Jeff Discord, which I will link to in the show notes. If you want to join our community, you can find this podcast and my other projects at theautisticmystic.ca, and you can find the church I pastor, Chosen Family Church, at chosenfamilychurch.com. If you'd like to join us for our bi-weekly services on Sundays, you're most welcome. They happen every other week. You just hit the Join a Zoom service link at the top of the homepage, fill out the form, and we will send you the link for the next service we do. If you like this podcast and want to help it succeed, please leave a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you listen on. Ratings and reviews help the show to get discovered by new people, and increases our audience and makes it more likely that we'll be able to keep this going. Until next time, remember that you are the divine image of God, the chosen vessel of the Holy Spirit, and the way God interacts with creation, and so are the people you hate. Love ya.